WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Children seem to intuitively know that a dull pencil is more reliable than a sharp one. Why a pencil point always breaks the same way has been a point of inquiry for engineers, including my guest, Henry Petrosky. Petrosky is a civil engineer and the author of the new book, The Pencil. Petrosky says he studied the simple pencil as a way to understanding engineering design. I asked him why he chose the pencil as his subject.
Well, what really first caught my eye was the fact that pencil leads sometimes break. And then it appears that they break in a rather predictable way. And this became somewhat of a challenge to explain why it is that the pencil point breaks always in the same place and always at the same angle and so forth.
Whereabouts does this happen for those who are still using pens?
Well, on a sharp pointed pencil, just out of a pencil sharpener, it will occur very close to the point. As the pencil dulls, and then if you press down and break, it'll occur further away from the point. It turns out, however, there's always a constant ratio of the sharpness of the point to where it breaks. And that's what makes it interesting from an engineering point of view. It seems to be a very predictable and reproducible type of thing.
And what did you find when you investigated this breakage point?
Well, I found that there were some people that actually investigated it earlier, which made it an interesting problem. But they couldn't quite explain why the pencil point broke off at a slant. And it turns out that became somewhat of a challenge. And by looking into things like that, it's helpful for people like me to explain to students the necessity of careful analysis in engineering.
And how is the process of careful analysis tied in with this then?
Well, if, for example, some people who are looking at pencil points can't explain why they break at a certain angle, then there's something wrong with their analysis. There's something that they don't quite understand. Now, if they're using that same kind of reasoning or similar kind of analysis to build a bridge or build a skyscraper, then there's a potential danger inherent in the design. And since my work has involved structural failures and engineering disasters, this was especially interesting to me, because I'm especially interested in knowing why mistakes are made in the design process.
What were some of the design problems that allowed for the creation of the pencil? What was needed that allowed for the development of the pencil?
Well, what was needed was something that was really a portable writing instrument. There were quills and reeds and ink for a long time, but these were very inconvenient, especially for people who wanted to go out and do things out in the field, let's say. The first illustration of a pencil, for example, comes from a naturalist who was interested in collecting fossils. Conrad Gesner, in the 16th century, illustrated this new pencil that he had found because it enabled him to climb rocks and make sketches without having to worry about spilling his ink.
This was an attempt to develop in a portable writing instrument that wouldn't leak in your pocket.
That's correct, and also that would make a sufficiently dark mark, because the old pure lead that was used didn't make a sufficiently dark mark to be very useful. The pencil also had the advantage, the graphite pencil, of having an erasable mark, and this meant that if you made a mistake in your sketch, you could correct it without having to really throw away the piece of paper.
How did you move from the curiosity and the design of the pencil and its strengths and weaknesses into some of the literary history of it and how authors used it, and what moved you in that direction, away from the strict engineering studies?
Well, I wanted to make the book appealing to a wide range of readers, and I also wanted to have some diversion of my own while I was writing the book, and I was just curious about how writers wrote. I've always been interested in how writers compose their work and whether they use a pencil or a pen. I thought I would go to Bartlett's and just find some interesting quotes to sprinkle throughout the book. I discovered that there are very, very few references to the pencil in Bartlett's familiar quotations, whereas the pen has almost a full column of references in the index. This didn't seem right to me, because I was sure that there were more authors that use the pencil. Maybe they just didn't write about it. And as I looked around, I discovered that, sure enough, that's the case. John Steinbeck, for example, goes on and on about what kind of pencil he wanted to use to write East of Eden. And yet, there's really no trace of this in the conventional literary references to his work.
So I remember reading Steinbeck's Journal of a Novel, and it's just filled with his preoccupation with the length of the pencil, how he happened to sharpen it, you know, at what point he'd throw it away.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
John Updike also told a story about how he writes. He said that he uses a word processor to write his columns and his reviews. He uses a typewriter to write his novels, and he uses the pencils that the New Yorker supplies that he lifted from them, because they have just this nice softness to them that allows the words of a poem to flow nicely from.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that, but if I had known that, I would have tried to integrate it into the book.
The second edition.
Perhaps.
Well, I guess I have to ask then, what did you use to write your book?
A word processor.
Did you feel any sort of disloyalty or a technological improvement?
I don't think I thought much about it. I used to write exclusively with a pencil. When I was younger and wrote poems, that seemed to be the natural thing to use. But as I have grown older and began to write longer and longer things, such as book-length manuscripts, the word processor just seems to be the natural thing to do.
Have you come across people who collect pencils?
Yes, I have. There's an American Pencil Collector Society that has, I think, about 300 active members right now. And they are avid pencil collectors that are organized. They have a monthly newsletter, and they exchange pencils imprinted with their names and addresses. They tend not to sharpen pencils. They will tend to write in ink rather than use a pencil out of their collection.
What is your fear regarding your association with this book on the pencil?
My fear?
Mm-hmm. That maybe you'll be labeled, the pencil man, or...
No, I've already been labeled that. I have no... It's too late for that. I think at one point I had a fear that it would be looked upon as a piece of frivolous work, and I think there are some serious... it's certainly a serious piece of scholarship without, I hope, being ponderous. It also, I think, has some real significant lessons for some of the current problems that we're experiencing in the United States today. The history of the pencil shows the importance of really keeping up in a research and development sense with the competition, meaning the international competition. In the short 400-year history of the pencil, we've seen the epitome of the pencil go from the English pencil to the French pencil to the German pencil to the American pencil. And now it seems to me that the Japanese pencil is possibly threatening to be the top pencil in the world.
What have the Japanese pencil engineers brought to the pencil?
Well, they seem to have brought more research and development than some of the American firms have been willing to invest.
How does that pay off in the actual pencil itself?
Well, it produces a lead that is smoother, more flexible. The thin leads that are in a lot of the new mechanical and automatic pencils have... really come from Japan. Japan has taken the initiative, at least. The pencils write very smoothly. They write a very, very fine line. They don't have to be sharpened. There are even pencils coming out now that don't even have to be, the lead doesn't even have to be advanced. It does it automatically.
You've said that engineering can be its own worst publicist because the more it succeeds in making a product or service that's reliable and efficient, the more engineering itself becomes virtually invisible and seemingly humdrum. Can you talk a bit about the importance of failure in an engineer's work?
Well, this really relates to my first book, called To Engineer as Human. I set out in writing that book to try to understand and explain to the layman why it is that some of the most embarrassing engineering accidents have happened, such as the hotel in Kansas City that had some skywalks collapse a few years ago. Airplane crashes, famous bridge collapses. Why are these things happening? And it seemed to me that in reflecting on this, it was because the idea of failure, how things can go wrong, how structure can collapse, is not properly anticipated. It appears that engineering is much, much more complicated than the conventional wisdom has it. There are definitions of engineering that say that it's merely applied science. Well, the problem with that is that engineers are really creating something out of nothing. To build a bridge over, say, the East River in New York or the Golden Gate in San Francisco is to really be very creative, almost at the level of an artist. You have to conceive what this bridge is going to look like, what it's going to be made of. There are no equations of physics or chemistry that tell you these things. Once you've sketched out, usually in pencil, by the way, the outline of a bridge, then you can go to the sciences and analyze what the creative part of engineering has put down. So the sciences really follow engineering rather than lead it. And in exploring things like this, I conclude and argue that failure is the key concept. If you properly anticipate how something can fail, then you can go ahead and design to obviate that way of failing. It's when you don't properly anticipate what can go wrong that Murphy's Law seems to take over.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming in and talking with us on Fresh Air today.
Well, thank you.
Henry Piotrowski is a professor of civil engineering at Duke University and the author of The Pencil. It's published by Knopf.